Serena Locke is here to run us through this week's rural news highlights. Good morning, Serena.
Very good morning to you, Clint.
This week, the Agriculture Minister made a pitch for young farmers wanting to buy their first farm.
Yes, well, just as with the housing market, farmland has shot up in price too, Clinton. So the Coalition says it will guarantee part of the loan if it wins next month's election. Agriculture Minister David Littleproud announced that commitment at the press club debate with his counterpart Julie Collins in Canberra this week. He said it would be a trial program to guarantee 40% of an eligible farmer's commercial loan, and that would be capped at $1 million. Mr. Littleproud says it comes from a pool of $75 million.
The banks have been very encouraging about how we do this as a pilot to see if this does shift the dial, not only for succession, but those men and women who are leasing country and just need a little bit of a helping hand. So over the next 18 months, we'll assess this and we'll assess all the programs, but we shouldn't stand still. We should continue to look at the opportunities to make sure we give people the opportunity and hope to stay in Australian agriculture.
So what have been some of the responses to this election promise?
Well, a real estate agent says it's not going to solve the problem of the loss of dairy farmers in Queensland who need more secure pricing. The Queensland dairy processor, John Cochrane, spent decades selling rural real estate around Gympie in southeast Queensland. And while he's welcomed the scheme, he says more is needed to attract people into dairying. But he said that cattle farmers could be taking advantage of it.
Oh, look, there will be some young people in the beef industry, for sure, and good on them. And I just love seeing young people having a crack. There is a couple of young guys around here having a crack, but they're in general, they're leasing because they can't compete with the price of land. Now, there's no better time. There's been no better time as far as interest rates are concerned to buy property. But the property market has, you know, really increased in value, so it makes it very difficult for them.
Meanwhile, part of Labor's campaign is a pledge to recover a pretty controversial parcel, 450 gigalitre parcel rather, of water from the Murray-Darling Basin for the environment, and this is causing some controversy in the ag sector.
Yeah, so Shadow Agriculture Minister Julie Collins was asked about the Federal Labor Party's plans to recover this amount of water to clarify the position that was outlined by Anthony Albanese last month. It is controversial because state water ministers agreed about 4 years ago to strict socioeconomic criteria as to how that water could be recovered because farmers don't want to lose any more irrigation water. But Ms. Collins was not very clear on what would happen to that remaining water outlined in the plan.
We don't want to see anybody disadvantaged. We want to work with those communities. We want to make sure that the original agreement is delivered on.
Do you, as the Shadow Agriculture Minister, believe that buying back irrigators' water is the right way to do that?
Obviously, Lucy, we want to be able to negotiate this. We want to be able to work with those communities and work with those farmers to make sure that the original agreement is delivered on.
I think there's a way to go in outlining their plan there. But Agriculture Minister David Littleproud's response was to make sure that the last 20% of water that needs to be gained for the environment under the plan is done without buying back any more water from irrigators.
Regardless of how they're doing it, they're running out of time. But moving on, a government report has found clashing power lines caused two fires in Western Australia's Great Southern region not too long ago.
State-owned electricity distributor is promising to replace fire-prone overhead power lines with more standalone solar and battery systems. Now, that's in a bid to reduce the bushfire risk. It comes 2 months after bushfires were sparked by clashing power lines. They destroyed homes, livestock, and tens of thousands of hectares of native bushland in the state south. 200 kilometres south of Perth, Michael Lange's piggery was destroyed by the Wickapin fire. That was a day of extreme winds and clashing power lines. And while he's rebuilt with the help of volunteers, the network operator, Western Power, has replaced over 50 kilometres of burned lines with standalone solar, a generator and battery systems. Now it's accelerating its long-term plans to reduce WA's reliance on overhead lines.
We're planning to install about 1,000 over the next 4 years, extending to about 4,000 over a 10-year period. So we'll do that proactively, but we'll also do it in response to some events where the network's been damaged as a more proactive way than just simply rebuilding it with poles and wires.
Japanese encephalitis has hit some pork producers in New South Wales very hard, and there are warnings it could start to affect the whole supply of Australian pork.
Yeah, so this is the first time the virus has come this far south. It's carried by water birds, mosquitoes spread it, and it affects pigs and horses. New South Wales has around 30 infected piggeries now, and some of them have seen very significant production losses. And there are no risk to consumers of pork with this JE, but the New South Wales Chief Veterinary Officer, Sarah Britton, says it's been very tough on the pigs and the farmers.
It's been pretty stressful and a taxing time for the, particularly for the pork industry, because not only have they had huge impacts on production, you know, like up to 60-80% of production impacted at some sites, it's also the mental health impact on the people, you know, because there's been a lot of stillborns or abortions or abnormalities in piglets and a whole range of things, which would be very stressful seeing that sort of thing happening day in, day out.
Work has begun, Clint, though, on a pig vaccine, and people at risk of contracting Japanese encephalitis are being offered vaccinations as well.
It's good to know. It must be a very stressful situation for those piggery operators. Now, plastics are clogging up our waterways, and now a new study has found microplastics are showing up in mussels.
Yeah, so research from Flinders University has found microplastics on every single South Australian beach they surveyed and in wild blue mussels, and that could mean other species are affected too. Lead researcher Professor Karen Burke de Silva says more needs to be done to protect marine life from microplastic pollution.
So fibres are sort of the microplastic that comes off people's clothing, off fishing line, that sort of thing, whereas fragments are the bigger chunks of plastics, which generally are broken down from larger, big pieces of plastic that are found in the ocean. So within our wild mussel stocks, they had accumulated about 3.5 pieces of microplastic per mussel, and they had that embedded in their gut, essentially.
More reason to buy wool.
Yuck.
Yeah, yuck.
Well, on a similar note, consumers are seeking out more planet-friendly food. And while it doesn't sound like plastic-filled mussels, one supermarket has launched carbon-neutral beef.
Yes, this is the grocery giant Coles. It's launched a new brand of carbon-neutral beef. Head of beef procurement at Coles, Steve Rennie, says it's worked with beef suppliers now for 2 years.
So it's from farm to shelf is what the carbon assessment's been, and then what carbon we can't get out of it in the supply chain. Once you measure it, you purchase carbon credits to offset that. That gives you a carbon neutral product, which is certified by Climate Active.
Yeah, so as you can hear, it's not that the beef or the meat processing itself is zero carbon. What they are doing is buying offsets. Now, Mark Ritchie is a beef producer from Victoria's High Country and supplies to the carbon neutral label. That's been 2 years of calculating the CO2 per kilo of beef. The Ritchie's farm has been audited and found that for every 1 kilo of beef, 11 kilograms of carbon dioxide is emitted. And that's the lower range of CO2 for beef farms, which can be as much as 20 to 25 kilos of CO2. For every kilo of beef. Mark says it's a lot of work to get accredited.
From what I've seen over the 2 years we've been involved with this program, that there's a lot of hoops that have to be jumped through. You know, it's not straightforward. It's really quite complex, and you need to get it right. You know, you need to make sure whatever you're doing has absolute credibility. And so I, as a producer, I would be reluctant to do it myself. It's a lot of work. I think I'm better off just sticking to what I'm doing, and that's producing cattle.
With all we talk about in this segment about the inflation of various parts of the grocery aisle, the price inflation, you wonder how much people are going to be willing to pay extra for those offsets in their
or
beef.
Just buy less beef.
Exactly, yeah. Now, the Sydney Royal Easter Show began 200 years ago, and one family of cattle breeders has been celebrated as the longest exhibitor over that time.
Yeah, these are the Brown family of Wallangurry Jersey Stud in Southern Highlands at Fitzroy Falls. They've attended every year since 1885. It's extraordinary. Robert Brown says travelling to the show in the past was a lot different. They had to walk the cattle 20 kilometres before boarding a barge to Sydney.
And when they first started, the farm was located at Dapto. And when they did start showing in the late 1800s, 1900s, they used to walk the cows from Dapto to Wollongong Harbour, where they put them on steamers, as they called them in those days. They steamed up the coast into Darling Harbour. And the relatives and friends met them at Darling Harbour and walked them out to the old showground at Moore Park. We think it's hard, we've got to put them on a truck and bring them to the show.
It's an extraordinary legacy, isn't it? Mm. My dad used to take stud Hereford bulls from the family farm on the train from Albury to Sydney to exhibit at the Royal Easter Show. That was back in the 50s. So,
yes, yeah. I know the last day well. We used to take our Paul Dorsets to the Perth Royal Show every year.
Yeah.
Pull on the moleskins.
Parade them around the grounds.
Exactly. Serena, thank you very much for that wrap of Rural News this week.
Yeah, my pleasure, Clint.